the world is going to be so, so different. Our environment, the very thing that we take for granted as being there, as being stable, is going to be so changed. And I think it just means that we need all of our teachers to be talking about this.
As vozes do professor.
أصوات المعلمون.
لوسي يا وعي.
Teachers' voices.
Hello and welcome to Teachers' Voices, the podcast made from the stories of teachers from around the world, talking in their own words. Teachers' Voices is produced in partnership with Bold, the digital platform of learning and development. I am your host, Nina Alonso. I'm an educational researcher, and for the past 10 years, I have been devoted to improving equal access to education. Through my research, I meet teachers and educationalists with a huge range of experience, and they share with me their inspiring stories and advice. If you're interested in how children learn and develop, please subscribe. You just heard from Christina Kwok, an interdisciplinary researcher specializing in international development, education, and climate change. In our previous episode, we learned about the many benefits that come from supporting youth activism, from leadership to empathy. And we heard stories about the learning opportunities that come with learning about sustainability and climate action. Today, we will be listening to Christina Kwok's research about youth activism in climate issues. And we will also share the five components of learning that best support what she calls green life skills education. We will also hear how teachers with differing levels of access to resources help their students to develop those green life skills. We will hear from Guyot, who teaches English in a small coastal town in Madagascar. Even at a young age, his students are becoming aware of how climate change is impacting the livelihood of their local community. I also spoke briefly with Mary from Kenya, who brings a compassionate approach to teaching. She tells us how getting her students connected online has played a crucial role in raising their awareness of sustainability and environmental responsibility. Mohamed Raisa, working with UNESCO schools in Indonesia, will close this episode. He illustrates the relevance of local facilitators supporting schools, teachers, and students in making learning communities visible and connected at local, regional, and global levels. Let's now begin our journey in Washington, USA, to meet Christina Kwok. Christina's work looks at the intersections of education, systems inequalities, and the climate crisis. Her research points at the underlying and systemic factors of vulnerability that really enable the climate crisis to disproportionately affect those that have been historically marginalized. We will hear more about Christina on our episode about girls' education, but for now, let's listen to what she can share with us about research in education about global action.
Well, when we look at research, I think it's clear from the research that knowledge about the climate crisis isn't enough. You know, we can increase the number of hours we spend during the school week talking about the scientific dimensions of the climate crisis, the causes, the impacts. But knowledge isn't sufficient to move from awareness to perceived risk to action. And this is especially the case when we think about communities and contexts where historically marginalized populations, including girls, including indigenous peoples, including peoples with disabilities, in these contexts, there are so many existing structural inequities and systems of discrimination that knowledge does not always equal power.
I had read a research paper authored by Christina about quality education for climate empowerment, which I found very helpful for school leaders and teachers, as it identifies five important concrete components to consider in teaching practice. And I asked Christina to explore some of the points she addressed in that paper.
So I think here, maybe what I'll do is I'll draw on some of the research that we've looked at and speak a little bit about what we call the design elements for, green learning or for green life skills education. And I think this is something that teachers can really kind of apply to the work that they do in their classrooms. And so these design elements, so there are five. And the first one is thinking about the cognitive entry point. So by the cognitive entry point, I'm talking about, you know, a localized experience with the climate crisis. You know, if that's flooding or if that's drought or if that's an extreme storm, some, you know, story in the news, in the local newspaper, for example, and using that particular event as an opportunity to engage on a, you know, on a cognitive level, the challenges with the climate crisis and how that manifests locally and what, you know, might be causing that, what might be some underlying drivers and what might, you know, be the impacts and possible solutions to it, right? So really engaging with the climate issue in a very cognitive way. And then the second aspect then is really creating an opportunity to engage with that experience or that example on an affective level. So in other words, engaging the socio-emotional dimensions, creating an opportunity to create empathy towards that particular event. So whether that is thinking about how that particular example might have impacted a community that they know or even their community, right? And really engaging with some of the emotional and the affective dimensions of that. And also, you know, a point of caution here too is again for teachers to be prepared for, you know, the level of fear and anxiety and potentially trauma that that particular climate event might evoke for their learners. But it's really important to begin creating that affective connection to it, because without creating that, we can't get to the third component, which, or the third design element, which is around sort of the existential dimensions of that particular climate event. And by existential dimension, I'm talking about engaging in a reflection about how that particular event or the impact that it had, how it challenges one's sense of self, one's understanding of how, you know, one ways of life, your way of life, right? Your way of living in your community, your way of being. Maybe it might challenge your sense of values or your beliefs and possibly even your worldview, right? And this existential component is something that the research shows is very much less touched upon. It can be scary, which is probably why it's not brought into the classrooms very often. But it's this existential component that is critical for kind of crossing that tipping point into transformative learning, and really being able to see how the climate crisis fundamentally shifts the way you view yourself in relation to our environment and our natural world. And the next one, the fourth dimension, is around ownership. And this is where, you know, teachers can really begin to help support and guide their learners towards a sense of empowerment, towards a sense of solutions, towards a sense of, you know, this is something that we can address in some way, whether that might be through small scale behavioral change, whether that might be through communication and conversations you might have with your parents or your households. What is the issue? What are the possible solutions we can think about? What are the personal commitments we can make to really doing something about this? And then the final dimension is the opportunities for empowered action. So this is really where the empowerment comes in, or it could be, you know, an active dissent. And this particular piece is really where we can see that, you know, the knowledge about climate change and the climate crisis begin to translate into a transformative learning experience that results in action, and importantly, empowered action.
Thanks to Christina Kwok for her inspiring contribution. My own experience supporting teachers shows how effective it is to provide them with clear steps and guidance that can be used in the classroom. We will come back to her again, but for now, to think about the learning components that Christina Kwok shares with us, let's continue our journey in One Island, one of the countries in the world that has the richest biodiversity, Madagascar. In the coastal town of Antalaha, on the northeast of Madagascar, Guyot teaches English in the only high school of the area. As many other schools in Madagascar, his school has scarce human and material resources. He describes how schools in Madagascar are and the environment he and his students share.
They look like big houses without many things. There's just tables, blackboard, and many kids. As a teacher, I always have overcrowded classrooms because, you know, 85 kids in one classroom, they squeeze because three people on one table, four people on one table. So the kids squeeze when they copy the lessons, when they write, because there are many of them in the classroom. So when I am in the class, I see many people. And then when I see outside, I see green trees and grass. Kids go to school, all of them, without exception, on foot. And that they live like 5 kilometers away from the schools, or 10. Few of them live a bit far away. But then around, the normal is 5 kilometers walk in the morning, and then you go home, and then tomorrow you come back. And that's it.
Guyo, who has been in the teaching profession for 10 years, has cooperated with multiple international organizations that work in his area, targeting young people's well-being. Collaboration is a big part of his teaching ethos. In his school, he likes organizing and supporting school clubs. Last year, he started working with some of his students on the international collaboration project about climate action, called the Carbonized, that we heard about in the previous episode. I asked Guyo to describe the kind of activities that they develop as part of their journey around sustainable development goals and of the Decarbonized project.
We have a kind of meeting in the nature, and then I talk to them. There is a project, guys. Here we have an opportunity to express ourselves about our reality in here. So there will be people asking us questions, or we will be gathering information, and then I will help you with your English, and then we communicate our situations, our life experience to the outside world. And then we will keep staying in contact with people from outside Madagascar, and which is very important for them to have to see how people from the other part of the planet experience and live. So this is the way I do with them. And then we organized once an outing to see a small village not very far from our school. And then we talked to the people. They were supposed to ask questions to their neighborhoods, to ask what the other people do and or face in their everyday lives regarding the environmental issues. But then without asking, it is something that you can see anywhere. You see, in our life in here, it is, I don't know if I can consider it as primitive, or we have first-hand experience about all of those things. We can see people burn forest. We can see people destroy the nature. We can see people live on farming. And the change of the seasons for the fruits, for example, the kids notice that. For example, this year we have lychee coming out in November, and then next year it will be December or January. There is nothing sure when is the right moment to start planting something, because sometimes too much rain, sometimes too much drought. So it is very easy to find.
Guyo's testimony relates to what Cristina Kwok told us a moment ago. His students were using local farming practices as their cognitive entry point. Centering the students' activities on local farming deepens the learning experience by creating deeper understanding and empathy for the difficulties that climate change creates for their neighbors. Talking to people directly involved in farming added a second dimension to the learning experience, as that provided natural opportunity to create empathy towards how climate changes affect the vegetation and the lives of their neighbors.
Some of them came to me and reported, you know, teacher, this happened with those people. And mainly, when they came to find that they were banned to fish, and they are a community of fishermen, because it was not the season, so they were banned, and then they couldn't have enough food for themselves, for the family. So my kids were very sad to know that they stopped you, and then what do you do now? The other people said, no, we have to wait for the seasons. We don't know how they decided, because our generations of ancestors, we live on this. But now we cannot do this because of the protection. My kids they are conscious that it is important to protect the environment. But there should be some politics, strategies on how to do with that. I know there are many institutions in Madagascar. There are officers doing this, but sometimes it's not efficient.
The research done by Guyot's students also seem to include the existential dimension that Christina refers to. It creates an opportunity for students to question their own role and responsibility within their community. It also shows the students' sense of ownership as they seek to move towards action. Guyot explained that the fieldwork and research that his students did led to writing an article that was published and shared during the COP26 summit in Glasgow. The article reflects the worries and claims of Guyot's students about climate changes in their local context. You can find the link to the article in the Scottish newspapers in the show notes.
Actually, that project gave us the opportunity to be heard, to be known by the rest of the world, because our article was published during the COP26, and that we were asked our life experience about the environmental change in here.
The participation of three of Guyot's students in the production of a written piece called Dear Green Place, representing their concerns about their local environmental realities, is a concrete illustration of the fifth dimension of the learning design described by Christina. It shows knowledge about climate crisis translated into a transformative learning experience as it results in an importantly empowered action. Guyot explains his motivation for teaching.
I grew up in a very small village where it was very few to find educated people who could read or speak foreign language. So I told myself, I will learn, I will study so that I can share with my people. So I can, when I know things, I can share the things that I know. So this is why being a teacher is for me a choice. I chose to be a teacher, and I call myself teacher for my whole life.
From the Indian Ocean, we travel to the African mainland to pay a short visit to my friend Marie in Kenya. I met this devoted teacher in the UN Climate Conference COP25 when she came to Spain with one of her students. She waits for my call sitting in her classroom, but she's having trouble with her internet access, so we managed to record with our phones exchanging WhatsApp voice messages.
I come from an area where we have scarcity of rain because we really do not have a lot of trees and cover and stuff like that. And now when I went to school, I learned that tree cover, it contributes a lot of rain. And given that I come from almost a semi-arid area, where rain is a problem, and that makes food production very, very little. And that sends a lot of people into lack of food and poverty. So I wanted to grow up a young people. I wanted to reach out to young people to understand the fact that it is in their responsibility to start doing these things early so that future generations can be able to enjoy from the impacts of their little actions that they take in working with the environment, growing trees, increasing ground cover, and so bettering the life of the future generations.
Marie highlights one issue about access to technology in education that might be given for granted in other contexts. She's very conscious that thanks to being able to connect online with other schools and students around the world, they can work together with other students and teachers from diverse countries in seeking ways to improve the sustainability of human life on Earth.
One experience that I can talk about that was quite important for me, working with students online, reaching out to others and collaborating with them in issues climate change and teaching each other and just making friends around the world, was the fact that I was able to push the school into getting us a complete coverage for internet and making it possible for students to be able to log in and be able to collaborate with others. So this is the basis upon which we were able to collaborate and be with other students and work with them on issues, be able to research, be able to carry out activities and events, reach out to each other and open our ways into going to the COP conferences, making lasting friends that we have been able to make over the years.
What Marie says reminds us that difficult access to technology leads to unequal access to learning. Unfortunately, the pandemic has only increased what is now known as the digital gap. Marie, like Uyo, show how when teachers are able to emphasize human connection between teachers with their students and communities, they often feel empowered to bring to their classrooms stories and experiences from their environments and feel the urge to connect with local and global experiences.
My way of dealing with students is getting very close to them, loving them, and making them want the best for me and for them. I just practice love.
This connects with Christina Kwok's call for educational systems to value the most fundamental aspects of human experience.
So many powerful and inspiring teachers throughout my life, but I feel like so many of the teachers that I have come across with have also been, you know, sort of victims of a system that does not value human and nature relationships. And as a result, I feel like has, you know, I think it's just sort of an indication of kind of what's, you know, who eventually suffers, right? Like if teachers aren't empowered to really draw into their classrooms things and stories and experiences from around their communities, especially with our environment and with the climate crisis, and that leaves such a void within their students.
We continue our story in Indonesia, in Jakarta City Center, where I spoke with Mohamed Raisa. Raisa is passionate about education for sustainable development. He works for the Indonesian UNESCO National Commission as a facilitator assisting the National Network of UNESCO Schools. He coordinates and supports the participation of the Indonesian school community in conferences and projects that deal with the protection of the natural environment. Raisa also tells us about the particular work he did with Indonesian schools preparing for the UN Summit on Climate Change as part of their collaboration with the global initiative that Guyot and Marie also participate in called the Decarbonize Project.
I'm an affiliate with the Indonesian National Commission for UNESCO. So we are connecting different schools to participate in this conference of youth programs throughout the years. So we've been working with different schools across Indonesia, and some of them, they are located in rural area or remote areas in the country. And sometimes we really had to go to visit them and had consultation and classes with them to prepare for the conference. And although some of them, they are located in the big cities, still they have sort of limited resources and facilities to join this conference. But altogether, we are quite happy because the teachers and the students, they are quite excited and motivated to join this project.
As part of the local and international collaborative work around sustainable development that Raisa supports, one leading school in Indonesia set a partnership with another school based in Turkey. Raisa describes what his role as facilitator consists on.
We visited the schools in different cities or remote areas, and sometimes the students and the teachers, they come to Jakarta as well to have the consultation and discussions and how we work on the or finish the assignments that were given to us. I was assisting them throughout the project with CGE last year, and then throughout all the online discussions that we had from February to May this year. So it was quite interesting because during our bilateral project, our school was paired with a school in Ankara, Turkey. And then our teacher, she actually came up with the idea of doing follow-up projects with the school in Turkey. So we had, you know, initial discussion to look into the opportunities. So we gave opportunities for every student participating in the dialogues to share their views on the, you know, given topic. So we prepared the whole discussion mechanism back in February, so the students and the teachers understood the assignments. So they did preliminary research before the actual session. So during the sessions, they shared their views and ideas about the topics and the assignments, and then they share what's different, what works, what doesn't work in Indonesia, or what is actually done in Turkey, and things like that. So they exchange ideas and concrete actions and realities in both countries. So we are all connected on a WhatsApp group, and during the discussion, we are using Zoom.
As a facilitator, Raisa curates many resources to support the students and teachers in the assignments and research that they do when participating in international exchanges with students and teachers from other parts of the world. He shares some ideas that can be useful for teachers working on issues related to climate changes. The links to these resources can be found in the show notes.
The Indonesian students and teachers and schools, they are using and utilizing social media platforms a lot. So I always look into or explore any online platforms or resources that I can share with my students. For example, there is this Pinterest that has a lot of infographics about climate change and things like that that I always share with my students. There are various content creators that are related to, for example, environment and global warming, and they actually create very nice videos and materials that the students can use. So sometimes I also share those videos as well, with be it video graphics or infographics. It's quite helpful for the students because, like, young people these days, they are very visual. So I think there are a lot of information available online these days, be it from LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. I think there are several platforms or outlets that I always refer to. One is the World Economic Forum, WEF. They produce a lot of information about, for example, climate change projects in different countries, like solar project and then windmill projects in different countries. And also there is this one content creator. He goes by Hashim Al-Ghaili. I can share that with you later on. He's produced a lot of informative video graphics as well, where the students can learn more about climate change from.
What we heard from Raisa, Marie, and Guyot makes me think about the relevance of thoughtful, kind teaching, and that's why I think the learning components that Christina Kwok talks about are so interesting.
So I think when we think about teachers, you know, and what they can do, I think thinking about these five design elements can really help them think about how to bring locally relevant examples of the climate crisis into their classroom, engage with it on multiple levels, affective, existential, and that ownership aspect, and then gradually build within their learners a sense of agency and a sense of direction on in terms of what they can do.
It's easy to see why climate change is such an overwhelming and scary concept that young people may want to switch off from, but by facilitating the understanding of how climate change affects local, everyday life, whilst also showing students that young people like them all over the world have neighbors, parents, and friends dealing with similar issues, they can remind themselves that small acts of understanding and action can grow into movements of collective change. Thank you for listening to Teachers' Voices, produced in partnership with Bolt, the digital platform for learning and development. If you have enjoyed this episode, you can find more about Cristina, Guyot, Marie, and Raisa, and this school network and their collaborations on bolt.expert and in the show notes. Our next episode will be a mini-sode, a special short but very practical episode that will feature tips, tools, and other sources of inspiration shared with us by past collaborators. Don't miss it! Also coming soon, you will hear an episode about EdTech in collaboration with Sophie Bailey and the EdTech podcast, and an episode on girls' education, also with Christina Cook. Subscribe to Teachers' Voices and you will know every time we publish a new episode. And don't forget to follow us and engage with us in conversations, sending your feedback and suggestions by email podcastteachersvoices@gmail.com or on social media. Let's keep on building learning communities while bridging research and practice.